And you know something about me that I think some people have a hard time grasping? I have to look at the news every day. I want to be a witness to what they're going through and see even the terrors. If anything, I just want to pulse them a little bit of joy and healing and love and just be there. And that is with my whole life. I like to be there for somebody who's going through something, that being with one another, you know, we are one in this world. And it makes me cry. It makes me happy and it's joyous. It isn't being stressed out that's going to save us. It's getting to joy that will save us.
Welcome to the Dandelion Effect Podcast, a space for organic conversation about the magic of living a connected life. Just like the natural world around us, we are all linked through an intricate web, a never-ending ripple that spans across the globe. Here, we explore the ideas that our guests carry through the world, remember who and what inspired them along the way, and uncover the seeds that help them blossom into their unique version of this human experience. This podcast is a production of the Feathered Pipe Foundation, whose mission is to help people find their direction through access to programs and experiences that support healing, education, community, and empowerment. Donna Eden is a pioneer in the field of energy medicine, and she was born with the gift of literally being able to see the body's energies in the forms of colors and geometrical shapes. After five specialists told her she had 9 months to 2 years to live, she healed herself from multiple sclerosis, allergies, asthma, and the effects of a heart attack at age 29. She then honed her skills and learned how to accurately determine the causes of physical and psychological problems based on the state of a person's energies and devise highly effective treatments for her clients and students. She has co-authored several books with her husband, Dr. David Feinstein, including Energy Medicine for Women, and The Promise of Energy Psychology. Donna has taught tens of thousands of people all over the world how to engage with the healing and restorative power of their own energies, and her time teaching at the Feather Pipe Ranch played an instrumental role in catapulting her career. Her personal story is fascinating, and yet she believes that each one of us is born being able to see energy, and that it's a tool that lies dormant if it's not used. Throughout her career, she's seen over and over again that we all have the capacity to tune into energy, what she calls the language of the world, and use it for experiencing mental clarity, physical vitality, and joy. In this conversation, I asked Donna to read my aura. Of course, I just couldn't help myself. And she shares her opinion on why so many people suffer from modern disease. She also graciously walks us through four incredibly simple tools for alleviating stress and calming the nervous system. Donna admits that year 79, her age as of this interview, has been her best year yet, and you will hear it in her voice, her laugh, her tone. She is full of energy. You can practically see her smile through your ears. I also want to take a moment to say a huge thank you to everyone who has followed along with this show over the last year and a half. It began as a way to stay connected when the Feather Pipe Ranch had to cancel their season in 2020, and now here we are, this episode wrapping up season two of the podcast. We'll be taking a break for the summer as the busy season at the ranch runs from June 1st to October 1st, and if you haven't visited yet, visit featherpipe.com to see which programs still have openings. Without further ado, I'm Andy Van Treese, and you are listening to the Dandelion Effect podcast with our friend and special guest, Donna Eden. I'm really honored to be talking with you. I've heard your name so many times, and I have spoken with and worked with Lauren Walker quite a bit over the last few years, and it feels like I'm kind of going straight to the source of some of the things that I have been able to study with energy medicine yoga over the years, and it's exciting for me and it's exciting for the ranch. So just appreciate you being here.
It's exciting for me. I feel a deep connection and bond with the ranch. And it's interesting that the years go by and I'm not going there anymore. But I want to again. I'd like to again.
Yeah, we have quite a few people that haven't been there in a while, but they were, you know, maybe like you, kind of got their professional start at the ranch, that are deciding to come back and not necessarily teach, but just visit.
I am believing and I am hoping that I will get to Feather Pipe again. And I want to. I really want to.
Later in the conversation, I'm excited to get into how you even heard about it and all of that. But I want to start with your personal life and your personal journey.
Okay.
And I've heard you say before that you were born to a mother that also saw and felt energy.
Yes.
And so it was something that you were born with and it was nurtured in your life.
It was so normal.
Do you have like early memories of knowing that you had this ability to see energy and to see auras?
First of all, I thought every human being on the planet saw energy. I had no idea that this was different. I was 20 years old before I found out that other people didn't see energy.
Wow.
I was stunned. I didn't know how they made up their minds to do things. I didn't know how they figured out anything. And I came to understand that they were developing their brains, you know, and some of them got very left brain, you know, and they moved away from their more intuitive side. Well, I was so on the intuitive side that in my later years, I'm really liking going into my brain a bit.
Yeah. Which is kind of the opposite of our society,
yes.
You know, like what we're taught in school and this path
yes.
that we're led down. So what was it like growing up? I mean, where did you grow up? Do you have early childhood memories?
Yeah, I had a brother and a sister and a mama and a daddy. And we all felt sorry for daddy because we knew he couldn't see energy. And we thought he was like this, my one little person in the world who was without any kind of handle on anything. So we didn't feel sorry for my dad. And my brother and my sister see energy. And my mother always talked about it. What color do you see around that man? Or did you see how it changed that color? You know, she just always talked about it. And I always thought my mother saw energy because she was orphaned very, very young when she was just turning 4. And then she was raised in an orphanage. And I think nobody told her that you couldn't do that. You couldn't.
Oh.
She just thought that was what was. And that would help her survive in this world without parents. She was never adopted. And then wow. She wanted to be the best mother in the whole world. And she'd have to make it up what it means to be a mom. And one of the things is to really prepare your kids about what colors mean.
When you say you see energy, it's colors around people. Like some people have heard the word aura. Can you try to break it down?
Color is only part of it. I see geometrical shapes a lot of the time. And I've come to understand what they mean. I think the one that is really important to me right now because it's growing for me and I'm seeing it around people now and then is what I've called the diamond inlay. I think because of the world we live in today, I think that's helped from some other place.
Yeah.
That's all I can say, because it helps you to do a whole bunch of stuff. It widens your consciousness. It helps you to see into other people and what they're going through. It connects you far away. You can send healing energy so far when you've got that force in your field. And it's very bright and it's wonderful when you see it. Sometimes you'll see it around somebody who you've never seen it around before. And you go, oh my God, that, you know, and it's like, you know, that they're expanding and widening. I think it's because we have to evolve. We have got to evolve, and we don't have another million years to get it together in, you know, which it usually takes that long. So I think we're getting help. I really do.
You mentioned that seeing the energy helped you make decisions, and you realized when you were 20, like, how are other people navigating their lives? Were you looking for certain colors, certain shapes, just a certain feel in your body? Like, how did it help you make decisions throughout your life? What were you following?
It's everything. It's another intelligence. I mean, it really is the language I think our body speaks, is energy. So when you're born with it, you just learn over time what different things mean. Like, you learn language. The one thing I was sure of I would never do is teach, never in a million years, because I'd never be able to find the words to be able to say everything I'm seeing and feeling. And so I've had to find words. Okay, here's an example. I remember when I was so tiny, I was sitting on my front porch and I couldn't walk yet. So I was very young. Right next door to us was a little boy named Sammy Hinka. And he was about 5 years older than me. He was about six, probably. And there were three girls that come walking down the street that are about his age. And they were mean. And they were saying, "We don't like you, Sammy Hinka." And they were saying horrible things. And what I watched was around Sammy was his aura shrink back down into him. And I wondered how in the world they could ever say those things to him when this is what is the result.
Yeah.
You really hurt somebody. And so later on, I was married before my present husband, who I've been with for over 40 years now. We've been together, but I was married the first time. And I realized that was what I realized. He couldn't see energy. And so he didn't have a natural help to know that, wait a minute, I'm hurting this person.
Yeah, that's interesting. And what was the experience that you had when you found out that not everybody saw it? What was that interaction?
Oh, it was so such a shock to my soul and my spirit. And I felt sorry for everybody in the whole world. Well, maybe that's why they judge each other or why they say something mean to somebody, because they can't see how the colors and energies are reacting in their body and around their body.
Yeah.
My first husband was going to have me committed, because in the state of California at that time, a man could commit his wife without getting a doctor's help.
Oh, my goodness.
But he was going to do it because he was so afraid people would think he was married to a nutcase if I ever spoke like that to people.
So was he the first person that made you realize that not everybody saw the things that you saw?
Yes, he was the first person, because it was such an issue in his life. He just was freaked. I mean, our marriage didn't have a chance, let me tell you. But I have one daughter who does aura readings, and she's been out at the ranch a lot of times.
Oh, cool.
And she's, when she was little, she could see colors and energy. And then when she went to school, she literally got put into a corner for talking about colors around somebody. And then it just went dormant. And that's what I see happen for people.
Yeah.
It's not that it's gone and it's not there. It's just has gone dormant and asleep. We have five different certification programs around the world. And what I've seen is people who start studying for a long time, very often they'll start seeing the colors again. So it's like just opens again. And so my daughter is opened again. So she's doing color readings now.
Do you believe that it's an ability that every human has?
Yes. And if you think about it, have you ever picked up a baby and had them look all around your head, but they're not really looking at you? I mean, they're looking at your aura and there's pretty colors around your head.
Oh, I'm thinking of my niece. She's 7 months now, and I'm thinking of what she's looking at. Yeah, I've never thought about that before. I'll have to pay closer attention.
I used to have a private practice. I don't any longer, no time. But but in the old days, I had a private practice, and when somebody would, a couple would come to me, they were pregnant, and they'd say, "We'd really like this child to be able to see energies." And I'd say, "Then keep talking about it. Don't quit talking. From the time they're born, talk about it. You know, the colors around a person, or what do you see?" Or because by the time they're a year, at least a year, there is dormant.
Oh, it happens that quickly.
It happens that quick because people have so much to learn in that first year of life. I mean, everything. And so that what that one is not being used is just chucked for a while. And so, I mean, sometimes you'll see somebody, it stays alive. But for most people, it doesn't. It's gone by a year old.
I would be remiss if I did not ask you, because I don't know if this is the only time that I will be in your presence or not, but I'm curious if there are any colors that you see in me. And I'm curious because I feel like I'm going through a color transition in what I'm drawn to. when it comes to energy, a lot of it has to do with what I'm drawn to in my fashion. And I used to be orange.
Yes, yes. It's not orange. You're not orange. You've got lots and lots of colors in your aura. And all of the other colors change when you're going through something or when you're evolving. Those colors change. There are two colors that never change. The one that's closest to your body is the etheric field, and it kind of mirrors you. And the other one is the one that is furthest out, and it's what I call the life color. And the life color is the one that I think you've probably been had for lifetimes upon lifetimes. You're evolving in, and all of your challenges come up in that color. And that color is violet.
Oh.
You're a violet life color. And violets are very old souls. They're old souls, but they didn't learn everything they needed to learn from their last lifetime. I think that my own hit is that violence either ran the world or were the victim of the world in all these other lifetimes. And whether they ran the world or they were the victim of the world, when they got to the end of that life, they said, was that all there was? And they didn't get to experience it and feel it in their bodies and in their souls enough. And I think that this is a lifetime violets are trying to get there, and that they will get free. And it's a good lifetime for you to get it. So that your next lifetime is going to be unbelievable.
Interesting.
India was a purple, an advanced being.
Yeah. Even thinking of the chakras, isn't that the color of that highest chakra?
Yeah. Uh-huh. I wish I could tell you everything in your whole field, but it's harder for me to look through electronics.
I was wondering that.
Yeah, it's hard, but I can see the violet because it's very loud in you, which is funny. You said you're moving away from orange. It's usually when there is change happening. I can see it straight through electronics. It doesn't matter. So you're going through changing.
Yeah, that is for sure. One of the things that I'm really interested in when I interview people is essentially like the moments that shaped them. So I know that you've had a really interesting personal journey, personal health journey. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. Yes. Let me get a drink of iced tea here.
Wet your palate. This might be a big story.
Yes, that was big. But probably the first thought that came to mind when you asked that was I was 4 years old. And in those days, we lived in a place called Hollydale, which is just out near Downey, but it was not a lot of city around there, but it was a little suburb. And my mother was in the hospital. She was dying of tuberculosis. She lived, so I'll tell you that, but we were told she wasn't going to live and to prepare. And my dad was gone somewhere. I don't know where my brother and sister was, but down about two blocks away, they were having a church revival, and I could hear the singing, and it was nighttime. And at four, I walked down to the church revival and went into the church revival. And I walked into a section. It was for teenagers, and this 16-year-old boy was leading everybody in song. And I can't sing, but the song he sang changed everything, because I was terrified I was losing my mom. I was also thinking, well, nobody knows me. I'm too young yet. I could go ahead and die in her place and then come back another time. I was thinking those
Wow.
Yes. But no, the world couldn't live without mama. And so I was thinking this as I was walking to the revival. But I was so sad. I didn't want mama to die. And the song was, you can't S-M-I-L-E. When you can't say a word, you can't S-M-I-L-E. When you cannot be heard, you can't S-M-I-L-E. When it's cloudy or fair, you can anytime, anywhere. And I began to sing with them on this chant. And I could feel a smile come up from my soul. And it had nothing to do with smiling at people. It was just like the most heavenly experience I had ever felt in the whole world. I knew it was going to be okay no matter what happened. No matter what happened, I would still be linked with mama. I was in joy like you can't believe.
Wow. And so you said your mom ended up not dying at that time.
Well, she came home. Gosh, I can't believe I'm saying this one, but I always had this angel who walked next to me. She was tall, like 7 feet tall. And we, wherever we went, we were together. Mama had just come home. And we'd actually gotten a court order to let her come home, that if we were quarantined, she could stay with us, because everybody was afraid of tuberculosis at the time. So they just assumed she was going to die there. And I said to the angel, if I was an angel like you, I could heal her. I just swallowed that angel that day, and Mama got well.
That's a fun story.
Well, as time went on, I really had a lot of ailments, and I did get the tuberculosis. She got well, and I got it. And then I was allergic to everything when I did get well. Like, I was allergic to everything. I just couldn't eat anything other people could eat. It didn't make sense, because you always heard that vegetables and fruit were so good for you. Well, those were the things that I was allergic to. Everything that grew out of the ground, I couldn't eat. And I had hypoglycemia really bad. And I was always told I was on the edge of sugar diabetes. And once I went into insulin shock, the hospital, they gave me some insulin thinking that I was sugar diabetic. And it nearly killed me, because it was exactly the opposite. I had way too much insulin.
Wow. And what age was this, Donna?
Well, it began around 5. And then it went all the way up, and then continued to be allergic to everything. So it was just a part of everything. It just, and I ate nothing but the best stuff. I never tasted sugar till I was in 7th grade. And but boy, did I want it then when I tasted it. And sugar never bothered me. Not like vegetables and fruit bothered me. Sugar didn't bother me. And I think it was because my body craved something to keep the energy going, and sugar could really rub it up. And then I got multiple sclerosis at 16, and he was the first person who told me, even though we already knew it. There was a man who, we lived in Ramona now, and we had moved years before that to Ramona, California, and it's a little town an hour and a half in from San Diego, up in the mountains. And a man moved there who had retired, who was considered the number one endocrinologist in the world.
Wow.
My mother took me to him to see me. He took all these tests, and he said, you can't ever eat fruit and vegetables ever again. But I knew that, because I'd get so sick from them. I was always just a little bit chubby, and I didn't eat much. But he said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get off of every kind of food and just eat straight meat. That's all. Just straight meat. You can eat as much of it as you want, morning, noon, and night. Don't ever let yourself go hungry. Just eat, eat, eat. And then let me check all your vitals, you know, in a couple of weeks. And I mean, one of the things that happened was I lost 17 pounds.
Just eating.
Anyway, I saw a few doctors, and nobody could really help me, and neither could he. Nobody knew what they could do with multiple sclerosis. And I was getting worse and worse, and I had a hard time walking. And then I had a heart attack at 27.
Oh my gosh.
Because all my organs were breaking down. And first of all, my mother was never worried. She always said, heal yourself, for goodness sakes, just heal yourself. What are you thinking? You would go to somebody else, heal yourself. And really, my mother got herself completely well a second time. When I was 16, she got TB again. And this time, there was no chance she would ever walk out of that hospital again. And she decided, okay, I have to heal myself. And she did.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's what I did. When I had the 5th specialist say to me, there's nothing that we can do for you. All your organs are breaking down so quickly. You know, you've got kids. Find homes for them. Find a way here.
Didn't one of them give you like an estimate of 9 months to live?
Yes. And somebody else gave me maybe up to 2 years, but that was the most. But for whatever reason, I didn't feel frightened when that 5th doctor said that. I heard Mama, heal yourself.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, okay, I'll go home and I'll heal myself. I did not have a brain to tell me what to do. I just started laying my hands on myself in different places and notice what happened then. What happened then? Every time I do something, what happened then? And I wanted to get my legs stronger so I could really get around the house easier and not have to be in a wheelchair. And that's what I did. I just started working on my legs. But what was interesting was that the multiple sclerosis didn't heal first. The first thing that happened was all my allergies went away, all of them. And I mean, it was amazing. I was eating bread and potatoes. I loved it so much. And string beans, for God's sake.
Yeah, everything probably tasted amazing.
It was so wonderful. And eating all that food, I kept losing weight. And then I realized, oh, my metabolism had been turned off all those years.
Yeah.
Probably if my body tried to metabolize something that was poison, it would have killed me. I think there was some intelligence that I knew was inside of me. And then I had asthma really bad, and my asthma went away. And then my multiple sclerosis started going away. I had buzzing all over my body, all over my face, all over everywhere. You know how sometimes your foot falls asleep or your hand falls everywhere. And sometimes I couldn't talk. The buzzing was too much, so I couldn't move my mouth. And that went away. I mean, I was getting more and more excited about everything. And then when I was well, I was obnoxious because I wanted to tell everybody so badly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just such a contagious feeling of like, I cannot believe that this just happened. I have to shout it from the rooftops.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly. And that's what I did. And I dragged people into my house. I'd see somebody on the street and I'd say, oh, here, let me tell you what you can do for that. You know, because they didn't know how I knew that they had it. Nobody was aware that I was seeing their energy, but I could see, you know, if they had cancer or if they had whatever it was. And so I just started teaching classes. And in the beginning, my very first class was $5 for the whole weekend. I wanted a whole lot of room to make mistakes because I knew I couldn't find my words, but I knew I had something that I could tell them about and share. And in the beginning, I didn't think I was teaching. I thought I'm just sharing with people what they could do for themselves.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about what that process was like. You said that you came home from getting these, you know, diagnoses and you're like, I'm going to heal myself. And you just said that you put your hands on different parts of your body. Were you putting your hands on places that you could see things?
Yeah. Okay. On my quadriceps, my thighs, I could see it. But also when I tried to walk, often there was no energy in my quads at all. And it just wouldn't hold me up. So I sat there and I put one hand just at the top of my legs and the other one around my knee. And I would hold them, just hold them like that with my whole hand. And I noticed it only took 3 minutes for energy to start moving through there and just be strong and vital. And I just said, oh my God, this is so easy. I was stunned that nobody had told me this and that we live in a culture that lost, you know, this natural ability that is for everybody. This is our birthright. And it was gone. And I was so excited. It was just thrilling to continue to find places. And I, on my lungs, I found points that later on, I found out where those were the lung one point.
Chinese medicine meridians.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I just would find wherever it hurt. And I would just stay there. And sometimes it'd be a surprise. Something from so far away in my body, I'd be in one place and somewhere else the reaction or the response was occurring. And I holding here, my toes would come alive.
Like holding them right between your eyes?
Third eye, right. And that really is the beginning of bladder meridian, which governs your nervous system. So it all makes sense. But at that time, I didn't know how it made sense. I just knew it worked.
As you were trying things, were you like writing them down or were you just memorizing what worked for certain body parts? Because it sounds like at this point you hadn't studied energy systems yet. You hadn't studied the meridians or the chakras or anything.
No, nothing. 3 years into it, when I was walking, I couldn't climb hills or anything, but I was walking. This is one of those magical things. I met somebody at an airport and she had a t-shirt on with two hands crossing here. And it said underneath, touch for health. I said, oh, and I went up to her and I said, what is that? And she said, oh, She was real flighty and she said, oh, I'm so excited. I'm going up next week to become a Touch for Health instructor. And I felt like lightning struck me. And I said, me too. And I asked her, how could I find out about it? And she gave me information, a phone number to call the Touch for Health Foundation. And I called them and they got my address and they made a mistake on me. They wrote me, they said, well, we understand you have passed all the classes to take your teacher's training. And it starts on Tuesday. And I said, wonderful, I'm coming. Now, I'd never had a class.
Yeah, I've taken my own classes.
And it was an amazing, almost 2 weeks training. And you go and you live there. And I was lost in some ways. And in some ways it was, that's that same place that I touched and here's the name for it. And then there was a lot of things that nobody had. I mean, I'm still learning. I continue to learn. You never get to the end of energy. Mm-hmm. It's always there. It's like this morning I saw on the news that astronomers have found the black hole in our solar system. And they never found it before. They just knew it was there. But they found it and they have the picture with the all these stars around it that look just like bright suns. And that was kind of me. I knew it was all there. I just didn't have the names for it.
Yeah. Donna, did you ever go through any periods of time where because this wasn't, you know, as mainstream or popular as it is now, or you didn't have language to it, was there any challenge to your mind, like doubting it, or were you just like, I've seen this work and I am strong in my conviction?
No, there was no doubt in my mind ever, not ever, ever. It's as if you were now could doubt your brain or something. Well, you know what's in your brain and what you're thinking. I also was really fortunate. My mom would say to me things like, when I was young, Donna, all your life, people are not going to see you. They're not going to be able to see you. And it has nothing to do with you. Don't try to do something to make them see you. It's just where they are in their evolution.
That is huge for someone to hear.
It was huge. I credit her with so much, you know.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear about when you went from using this energy to heal yourself to then you said you started sharing it with people and teaching. Where did your teaching converge with the Feather Pipe Ranch? And where were you in your process with that?
Oh, I don't think I had my book yet. And my book came out in 98. I thought it was before the book. India called me up. She actually at one point came to Ashland. I was in Ashland, Oregon, and she came to see me. She said she just knew she wanted to get me to teach there. And I said, it was scary and exciting. And anyway, I went. And it was so wonderful. She did have words. She had extraordinary words that she could put to my energy. And at one time, I even suggested maybe I should be showing people what energy does, but you can say it all.
Yeah, we'll co-teach. You know?
And she said, no, you're going to be saying it. But what she did do that first class that I taught at Feather Pipe, there was a whole bunch of, I don't know, people who were really up in their heads. And she knew that they were having some trouble believing me. She did interpret. She was so wise and smart. She just interpreted me. She made everybody ashamed of themselves.
And did things shift after that?
Oh, yeah. That was on the first night. It was on a Friday night and Saturday and Sunday. So Friday night, she came in and she did that. And then she came in to just sit and be in the class after that.
Yeah.
No, I loved her. I loved, for me, I guess, in my life, because energy is what is normal, I thought everybody was in my situation. I thought everybody saw energy. So if you also had words, along with the energy, it's like you had two languages that you could speak fluently. And so I could speak this language fluently, but not words. But as I'm getting older, I'm getting more and more words.
I mean, you've taught all over the world. You've had to find the words.
Yeah.
I've just been introduced to energy medicine through Lauren maybe 3 years ago. when I did her workshop last summer at the ranch, I did the whole week, and there was just a profound shift in my tuning in to myself. And it was, you know, there were places where she said, you know, you might feel this, you might feel this. And I went through the whole like disappointment of not feeling things or seeing things. And then it was just like, that's okay. You know, it's just part of a process. I'm in my 30s and I've never thought about this stuff before. So it's going to take a while to surrender the mind and really to get into the body in that way.
Yeah, we're just in different places with it. But you, I mean, to go up into my brain and have my brain give me the thought instead of my energy tell me is thrilling. And it's just a learning. And
I know that you mentioned that at one point India told you, you're not going to be here forever. Like this is going to be big time and you're going to be needed all over the world and to, you know, to help all over the world.
That's what she told me.
Was that after a few years of teaching at the ranch?
Let's see, I'd gone down to teach in Mexico too, about three times. And I love teaching in Mexico. I love teaching at Isla Mujeres.
Oh, okay. When they would do the travel programs.
Yeah, it was just so fun. And I love that. Maybe there was even a slight bit of judgment of anybody who would say ever no to Feather Pipe. There's people of the highest integrity, the biggest souls and hearts, and they really wanted to spread it. And I never dreamed I wouldn't be coming there, but it was out of my hands. I felt like David and I, my husband, you know, that there was a movie once about the tail wagging the dog. We were holding onto the tail and that dog was wagging us all over the place. And we didn't know what we were doing. We didn't know how to run a business. We didn't know anything. We just answered the call.
That's beautiful. I mean, I think that one of the things about India, this has been my experience with her too, is just that deep belief in people, that their gifts are needed in the world. And if that means that you are associated with the ranch and that's one of your venues for a couple years and then you go off, it's like, that's what's needed. I've been a writer forever and I would like freelance write part-time and then I'd work in natural food stores and get these other little gigs. And she'd be like, stop working in grocery stores. You have to be writing. You have to be writing. Yeah. And I still remember that to this day, because when somebody believes in you before you believe in yourself, it's that catapult.
Yeah. She's an evoker of your spirit and your direction. Yeah. And she believes in people. Yeah. She was incredibly wise. She may not have seen energy, but she knew it. Things would bubble up out of her and then find her a way out of her mouth. It was astonishing.
Do you have any memories of teaching at the Feathered Pipe Ranch or anything that comes to mind when you just reflect on what your time there was? Was there a certain energy there that you liked to play with when you taught or anything in that realm?
Wow, that's a good question. Let me think about it. Do people teach in the same place as they used to teach?
In the main lodge?
I really loved that space. It was a very healing space. Then when I'd go out and I'd start walking, you know, in the forest or around the grounds, I would always come back so replenished that I was ready to teach another class. You know, it was really good. It was a very healing space for me.
It's wonderful to think about, you know, that place has been around and people have been teaching there for almost 50 years. And to think of all of the people who have sat in a circle in that main lodge and all of the people who have walked the grounds and the healing that has happened there, it really is like this vortex.
Oh, it really was. It was an amazing thing. Here's something else I remember. And I never knew whether it was the space or it was because India did it, because we had a lot of left brain people in that very first class that I taught there. They were throwing questions at me and suddenly I didn't know where those answers were coming from. You know, they weren't anything I'd ever thought of. But I either felt that India gave it to me or it was a space, that there had been so much healing in that space that I was just in the field and here it was coming.
What were they, like science-based questions?
Yeah, they were much more rational that people would be able to understand.
That's understandable. Being introduced to something that is totally new.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, your foundation of understanding of energy is like a 9-system methodology.
Yeah.
What I'm most interested in when it comes to your work, when you go out into the world and you're teaching people and you're experiencing people and hearing from them, both hearing their stories, but also, you know, tuning into their energy and what's going on with their bodies, what is it that you see the most of? Do you feel like there are like modern ailments that majority of people are suffering from that has to do with the ways that we live these days?
See, I've got a whole bunch of answers for that. One answer is we evolved for a world we no longer live in. You know, the world we evolved for was natural. And now everything is unnatural. The energies around us are man-made, and there's pollutants in the paint and in the world around us. And so our bodies have had to figure out to either adapt or throw it off. And I think usually people get sick for, that's one of the main reasons that they can neither adapt quickly to something that they've never been around. They didn't evolve with, you know, some pollutant. So they don't know how to adapt or throw it off. And so they're vulnerable to it. Another thing that I think makes us vulnerable is that, gosh, people are so much better and more wonderful than any of them know. And so people, you know, question themselves and are hard on themselves or aren't as feeling as safe in this world. And all of that is an energy that interferes with the natural flows. And so sometimes I'm just blown away with somebody so beautiful. And my favorite seeing is somebody's soul coming up. They've got this glorious soul, and yet they're talking nuts that because it doesn't even match what their soul is about. And I just think, gosh, that's part of education that should have happened for everybody, because underneath all of their stress levels are the radiant circuits. But you've got to move those stress levels out of the way. And the radiant circuits often tap onto your soul. So your soul comes up and you can feel yourself more connected in to something spiritual or something bigger or something more whole.
Maybe what would be fun is just telling us like one or two exercises, one or two points, something that you work with that would begin to allow those stress levels to move out of the way of the radiant circuits in the soul.
Okay. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things you can do. And I would tell everybody to just look up the daily energy routine, you know, on YouTube or anything, the daily energy routine, or you can also put my name with it. It's taught all over the world now, and it really helps train your body, your energies to come up to date and evolve more quickly. And you are suddenly more able to adapt or throw off energies, whether it's somebody else's negative energy or if it's something, you know, biological. So I would say that first of all. But one real easy thing to do is if you're not feeling, I don't know, you're just not feeling connected up to yourself or anything around you, if you put one middle finger at the third eye and the other one in your belly button, push both of them in and pull them up and breathe. It may even make you want to breathe because it does move the oxygen. But if you sit that way for even a minute, it will connect up your nervous system and things will just process better and a lot of stress will go out. Here's something else. In every system, they teach you about breathing, but a simple thing to remember: when you breathe in, more important is to breathe out than breathe in. So you want to take a people who think, well, breathe in deep and then let go. But and this one I learned when I had asthma. If I couldn't catch my breath, even when it felt like there was no breath there to let go, I would start letting it go. And what that does is that engages your vagus nerve. And your vagus nerve brings calm and everything's good, everything's safe. And it gives the message to everything in your whole body. Mm-hmm. It gives the message to calm down and you can relax. And it happens when you yawn as well. And you let your breath out. Let that breath out from the back of your throat. And so if you can't relax, if you have anxiety, you just can't get out of something, see if you can just breathe out as far as you can, even to the point of coughing almost, and then do it again. You might take in a little bit of a breath because you need something to let go, but it's really, really good for you. Let's see, I'm going to talk you through an exercise I really love, okay?
Okay.
I'll see if I can say it well. Okay, everybody, close your eyes and place your fingers sideways over both of your eyes. Take a deep breath in, and as you let your breath out, drag your fingers to your temples. Now take a deep breath in and push your fingers above your ears. Let your breath out and go around behind your ears and come down the side of your neck. Mm-hmm. And you're right on your vagus nerve and also something called triple warmer. You're going backwards on, and then come down to your heart chakra. What you just did, when you go across your eyes, that's something called the regulator flow. And it helps regulate energy differently than you've been regulating it. When you come to your temples, that's a triple warmer point that that just helps you calm down. Go around your ears. You're going backwards on triple warmer that governs fight, flight, or freeze. And then you go down your vagus nerve, and triple warmer, and you come home to yourself on your heart. Oh, I'm going to have one more, just one more. Okay. You know how kids all over the world make a heart? You know, that's not really our heart, but there's a reason they do that. So come down to below your rib cage, take a deep breath in, up the central meridian, around your breast, go down and make a heart on your chest. If you do that when you're not thinking about where you're supposed to go, you'll notice it. A lot of people tell me they start to smile. That shape is the shape of an energy. It's in the radiant circuits. It's called the bridge flow. It bridges you to the center of you, bridges you to a safe world and other people that you feel good about. And kids do it all over the world because they may not see energy, but they know something. There's a knowing, and that's how they make hearts. Mm-hmm. I always love that. And when I've gone to areas of the world where they're far less technological than we are, they're more indigenous people, they know that that's an energy. We're catching up to indigenous folks.
So much of those ancient wisdoms are being, you know, researched and proven in the left brain, proven with science and with modern technology and these things. And it's interesting because it really feels like there's a resurgence of these innate understandings.
Yes. There's two beautiful women. I don't know if you've ever heard of Jean Houston.
I have. Yeah.
She's an extraordinary soul, an extraordinary being. And she's written a zillion books. But one of my favorite is Search for the Beloved. And that's really you. And she and a woman named Anneliese Smitsman, I think, are writing a trilogy right now. And they've just finished the second of the trilogy. And it's the future human of where we're all going. It's really good. It's worth reading. And I think that with all of these things happening in the world right now, that a scary time for so many people with the Ukraine and the unknowing and COVID and just everything. And it's a dying of the old world. And I think it's just trying to break through. And so that diamond inlay is about consciousness too, but they write about consciousness, so that's good.
You are such an embodiment of joy and radiance, even just in your voice and in your smile. And every time I've heard you on any kind of podcast or video, I'm like, can I have like 1 ounce of the energy that she has? This is incredible. Amidst all of those things that you just mentioned, all of the things that we experience right now, how is it that you stay connected or how is it that you continue to find some peace and really joy?
I mean, one of the things is to really see it, but know it. If you can't see it, everybody should know it. The souls in everybody, even rotten human beings, their souls are much more pure. And so when somebody's doing something bad, if you can remember that their soul is just trying to learn and get past this and be better And also, I do think the world is so wonderful. It takes my breath away. I just do get happy in it. And you know something about me that I think some people have a hard time grasping? I have to look at the news every day. I want to be a witness to what they're going through and see even the terrors. If anything, I just want to pulse them a little bit of joy and healing and love and just be there. And that is with my whole life. I like to be there for somebody who's going through something, that being with one another, you know, we are one in this world. And it makes me cry. It makes me happy and it's joyous and I love joy. It isn't being stressed out that's going to save us. It's getting to joy that will save us. And it makes your body healthier. It makes you like aging. You know, I'm 79 years old and I love being this age. I love it. It's not at all anything I was told it was going to be like when I got this age. It's my best age so far.
Donna Eden, what a fascinating person. Her joy and energy is so contagious, I practically floated away from my computer after that conversation, and I am so excited to dive into the new book on my nightstand, The Energy to Heal, which was written by her student, Lauren Walker, who developed energy medicine yoga based on her own experience with Donna's work. With all of the challenges we face in the world today, in the personal and the collective, I'm inspired by this episode with Donna and all of the other amazing people I've gotten to talk with this season about food, technology, veterans' mental health, Native American spirituality and healing traditions, travel, sustainable building, the beginner's mind, energy, and so much more. These conversations are proof that really good people are out there, leaving the planet just a tiny bit better than how they found it, or at least trying, as we all are, to do our best. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, and go back to listen to any episodes that you missed from seasons 1 and 2. A special thank you to Matthew Marsalek and the Drum Brothers, whose music you hear at the beginning and end of this podcast, as well as Dr. Jean Shinoda Bolin, who first turned us on to the phenomenon of the dandelion effect and how ideas move through the world. This podcast is a production of the Feather Pipe Foundation, a 501c3 dedicated to healing, education, community, and empowerment. Please donate to this project by visiting featherpipe.com/gratitude and share it with your friends. I wish you all an amazing summer. We will meet again in the fall. Have a beautiful day.